You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
On the July 1st episode of the Ezra Klein Show from Vox, I never miss an episode, I'm a total Ezra fangirl, Ezra spoke with the head of the Public Religion Research Institute and the author of The End of White Christian America, Robert Jones. During their convo about the demographic changes that drove racist white evangelical Christian voters to embrace wife-discarding, porn-star-fucking, non-church-going, pussy-grabbing rapist Donald Trump, Klein and Jones discussed the rise of the nuns. That's N-O-N-E-S, not N-U-N-S. These are people who report no religious affiliation at all. Nuns now make up close to 25% of the population, a huge spike over the last decade. There are actually more nuns out there than evangelical Christians. Now, if only we could get the nuns to vote as reliably as the evangelicals do. But anyway, young people are four times likelier to be nuns. 40% of people under 30 are nuns, and many young nuns are actually former evangelicals. So why are they leaving their churches? Jones says the political partisanship of evangelical churches is one big reason, but it is not the only reason.
We asked them the reason they left. About a third of them cite specifically negative treatment of gay and lesbian people or negative teachings about gay and lesbian people as, you know, as a reason why they left. So that's a one way in which I think a very particular, you know, and prominent issue on the political right came to be at odds with, you know, the younger generation.
What Jones said there certainly jibes with something LGBT activists have long said. Young people are more likely to know gay people, and as a result, they're less likely to be homophobic. And when forced to choose between their gay friends and the lies they've been told about gay people by their parents and their preachers, you can count on young people to choose their gay friends. Or you could. As USA Today reported at the end of June, right before Pride, young people are growing less tolerant of LGBTQ individuals, a jarring turn for a generation traditionally considered embracing and open, a survey released Monday shows. The number of Americans 18 to 34 who are comfortable interacting with LGBTQ people slipped from 53% in 2017 to 45% in 2018, the only age group to show a decline. And that was after another decline from 2016 to 2017. And the numbers, they got even worse the further into the survey you dug. The annual Accelerating Acceptance Report from GLAAD. In 2016, just 2 years ago, that report showed 62% of young men described themselves as allies of LGBTQ people, and today only 35% of young men call themselves allies. The number of young women who call themselves allies to queer people fell 13 points, from 65% to 52%. The authors of the study, and a lot of folks who've read it and dug through it, they're blaming Donald Trump, and they are right to blame Donald Trump. In 2016, the GOP approved the most homophobic anti-LGBT platform in its history, and then a minority of American voters, thanks to the Electoral College, managed to stick a bully in the bully pulpit. Just as Trump's blatant racism has had an impact, Trump's blatant anti-queer rhetoric and anti-queer policies have had an impact. As has the generally toxic nature of social media and online quote-unquote discourse. The anger and hatred boiling out at us from our phones 24 hours a day, that's having an impact too. But it's only the numbers for the young that seem to be in free fall here. And again, young people are likelier to know queer people, and knowing us used to immunize someone against homophobia and anti-queer attitudes and make them likelier to be allies, but that no longer seems to be working. There's a disturbance in the force. Why? What is it? I have a theory, and it's right here at the end of this limb. I am concerned that we queers are contributing in a small way, emphasis in a small way, to the collapse we're seeing in support for LGBTQ people among the young. I don't think we're driving that collapse, but we're not helping necessarily to slow it either. It seems to me that at some point, maybe it was the rise of Tumblr or the Twitterification of our brains or that moment when outrage became its own reward, we went from the gay friend you might actually like if you got to know us to a test you were almost certain to fail. I know queer people, young and old, who can't keep up with the current lingo where gender and sexual orientation are concerned. LGBTQQTIAA2SPK, what was that again? And there's an awful lot of jumping down throats that goes on out there, particularly online, when someone gets anything wrong. When someone doesn't know that pansexuality isn't the same thing as bisexuality, or that to be non-binary isn't the same as to be agender, or if someone doesn't know that some men might need abortions. There's this attitude that we shouldn't have to explain anything, that we shouldn't have to do the emotional labor of educating the cishets because true allies would educate themselves. And when one of those damn cishets doesn't know something already, they get yelled at. We don't explain because we shouldn't have to explain. So we explode, which means we've raised the bar on allyship from be kind, have an open mind, listen to us, to don't you ask any questions, don't you expect anything from us, and don't you ever get anything wrong. You know, in all honesty, sometimes when I get online, I get offline a few minutes later feeling like I like queer people a little less than I did before I got online. Is it any wonder that young straight people who are online constantly and are more likely to know queer people who are also online constantly, we're blowing up and calling out are the norms? Is it any wonder that they might be liking us a little bit less now too? Don't get me wrong. I was an angry young fag when I came out, and I am still an angry fag today. There is a lot to be angry about. But it's important to distinguish between ill-intentioned enemies pushing falsehoods and well-intentioned friends making mistakes. And it's important that we reserve our righteous anger for our enemies. Because blowing up at our well-intentioned friends or potential friends, that just creates new enemies. And we don't need any more of those. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as long, more guests, no ads, Rob Walker, old friend of the show, joins us to discuss employment issues and answer your work-related questions. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Talkspace, online therapy that makes it easy to get extra support. Go to Talkspace.com/savage. Make sure to use the code SAVAGE to get $65 off your first month. Talkspace.com/savage.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to Squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by DoorDash. Get $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter the promo code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan, love the show. I was in a relationship for 7 years with a girl that lived in my cul-de-sac. We never really had a whole lot in common, but our sexual chemistry was completely off the charts. Occasionally, I would videotape our sexual endeavors and considered those videos more valuable than gold. Our relationship ended mostly due to our lack of things in common, and now I am currently about 2 years into another relationship. Her and I have many things in common. We get along famously, and I love her. But the sex isn't what I had with my ex. I constantly watch the videos I made with my ex reliving that amazing sexual chemistry her and I had. My current girlfriend would understandably be hurt if she knew this, but nothing turns me on or makes me come as hard as my ex did or the videos I still watch of me getting fucked and sucked by her. My current girlfriend fulfills me in so many ways, and we have sex all the time. It's just not on the amazing level I had with my ex. My question to you, Dan, is how wrong do you feel what I'm doing is?
I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with what you're doing. I think it's not helpful to you. You know, pre everyone carrying a porn production studio around in their pocket, before cell phones came along, it was bulkier, cumbersome. It was a pain in the ass to try to film yourself having sex. Now it's really easy and lots of people do it. And the issue here is you are constantly comparing sex with the girlfriend you've got now, who you like and you have a strong sexual connection to, with the sex you had with that other girlfriend that you had this amazing sexual connection to. And rather than that, those memories fading over time, you're constantly revisiting and reliving the sex that you had with your ex-girlfriend and constantly then comparing the sex you're having right now with your current girlfriend and finding it wanting. So it might help if you deleted all the videos and only had these as fond memories as opposed to documented incidents. It's a little harder to re-enter them and relive them and find your girlfriend wanting in comparison. I also think perhaps some of your sexual energy is being sucked into these videos, and you could take that sexual energy and apply it to your relationship with your girlfriend and see if you can't form a stronger sexual connection with her. Now, sometimes two people have chemistry. Sometimes two people just click in a way that that person, either of those people individually, are never going to click with anybody else, and you can't force it. Doesn't mean you can't work on the sexual relationship you have now. Doesn't mean that it can't improve. Usually it takes honesty and conversations and using your words and telling somebody what you want and being solicitous about what they want and their comfort and their desires to get there. But you can get there. And I think you'd maybe get there a little bit faster with your current girlfriend if you weren't spending so much time alone with your ex-girlfriend. So maybe delete the videos, or if you can't delete them, and I don't think in your shoes I would be able to delete them myself either, at least put them in a place where they're a little harder to access than they are on your phone.
Hi, I'm a late 30s straight woman on the West Coast with a dating and disclosure question. So I'm single and I'm wanting to go back out and date, but I always stumble when guys, or I guess anybody really, asks me about my parents or my family. So it came from a very abusive, totally fucked up, rotten, no good family. And when I turned 16, after a particularly abusive scenario, I walked out and I never saw them again. And that includes my siblings, who also contributed to facilitating that abuse. Anyway, fuck them all. But that brings up a pretty tough situation when it comes to dating. Naturally, the inevitable question of, tell me about your family, comes up. I never know what to say. So for the past, 20 years, maybe 25 years, but for the most 10 some years ago, I just started to say that I'm an only child and my parents died in a car accident when I was 16. And they say, oh, I'm so sorry. And the conversation doesn't really come up again, thankfully. Besides, I never disclose the real truth of such personal information to someone I'm casually dating. Anyway, eventually I'm going to find someone I really like, and I don't want to lie. But in the past, when I tell a guy the truth, they seem to change. And they start to either feel sorry for me or use it against me in an argument, which is a total deal breaker. And I dumped the motherfucker already because that's such a bitch move. So I guess my question is, how do I start a conversation of a touchy subject by admitting that I've lied to them, even if the lie was to protect that new person? How do I admit that I've lied?
Yeah, the trap for you is by the time you realize you really like a guy, you've already told him the lie, because you don't realize that you really, really like someone until after you've been hanging out with them for a while, dating them for a while, and you've already deflected the question about parents with the only child orphan story. But this isn't a lie where you've led them to take risks that they might not want to take. You're not lying to them about the fact that you're sleeping with other people. You're not lying to them that you're already married and you're keeping that from them, so the kind of relationship that they may have wanted to have with you isn't possible. You're telling a kind of, rather baroque white lie to deflect and delay a more difficult conversation about exactly what went on with your family and why you weren't in contact with them anymore. And it's perfectly understandable why you wouldn't want to have that delicate conversation where you have to make yourself very vulnerable with someone that you barely know yet. And so to head off prying questions about your parents or your siblings, you lied and said you didn't have parents or have siblings. The actual truth is worse. I'd rather have loving dead parents than abusive live ones. And you'll have to lay that at their feet. And if they can't wrap their heads around the fact that some people have really shitty, toxic families of origin that for their own sanity, they have to separate themselves from, yeah, that's not somebody that you would want to or could be in a relationship with. And when you do tell the truth, tell them that this is a deal breaker for you. Tell them that throwing this in your face, using this in an argument to attack you, the fact that you don't have a relationship with your parents is evidence that there's something wrong with you, as opposed to there was something deeply wrong with them, which is why, because there wasn't something wrong with you, you had to get away from them. And you deserve credit for getting out of a bad situation at 16, standing on your own feet, rescuing yourself, saving yourself. Those are all signs about not how you're damaged or perhaps not as ideal a partner as another person might be, but signs that you would make a very good and capable partner. The way you took care of yourself, I would like somebody who could take care of me like that. And anybody who doesn't see it that way doesn't deserve you and isn't going to be the right partner for you. When you walk back that completely understandable lie that in no way put them at any risk, send up a flare and let them know that this isn't something that you have a sense of humor about, and this isn't something that they are allowed to weaponize in any conflicts in your relationship, because that will be the end of your relationship.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. They make it simple and intuitive to create your website, blog, or online store. You can create a beautiful website with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. They have templates that were created by world-class designers that you can just drop in and it looks good right away. Squarespace is used by a wide range of creative types, businesses, musicians, designers, artists, restaurants, and more. If you plan to create a website for your business, Squarespace has all the tools you need to get it up and running quickly. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage, and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan. I'm calling from Toronto, and my question is about swinging and group sex and such. So my boyfriend and I have tried and participated in a few occasions of swinging, and we have gone to swinging parties, both public, more public and private ones, but it never seems to work out for us. We are pretty good in bed, both of us, we think, and we have a pretty good sex life. We are very good looking, but none of these experiences have been great for us. The weird thing is that we are usually not turned on, so I don't get wet. He doesn't get hard. Doesn't matter the kind of experience that we're having, whether it'd be a big party or a smaller party. It just, I'm not sure why it doesn't work for us, and I'm very interested in the psychological aspect of it. So you could say that it's just not our thing, but I'm just wondering why is that. We're both very open-minded sexually, so I just can't figure out why it just doesn't work for us. It's fun, but it's not particularly sexy, so the both of us are pretty turned on when we're alone together, but when we go to parties, it's really strange. And I was just wondering if you had any input.
I like to write in public. I like to sit in cafes with my laptop or sit in bars with my laptop. And I find the chaos and the noise adds to my focus. I'm able to focus. I'm able to write with chaos and drama noise. If I'm in a quiet room all by myself or with one other person quietly writing, I can't do it. It doesn't work for me. I like that public thing. I like doing it in public when it comes to writing. Not everyone feels that way. A lot of people I know who are writers, who I've talked to, they couldn't write the way I write. Like it just doesn't work for them. It pulls their focus. I think that's what's going on for you in this environment, in a swingers environment. When you are alone, just the two of you in a quiet room, you can focus and you really get into it and you really enjoy. And that's the turn on for you, is that ability to focus is a part of your turn on, part of what makes sex work for you. And when you're in a big room full of people, you aren't able to tune all those other people out, that you're being pulled, your focus is being pulled this way and that way, and it's pulling you out of the moment erotically with your partner, and your attention is chopped up and diffuse, and that undermines your arousal, makes the
situation and the environment less sexy for you. I don't think you need to wring your hands about this endlessly. I don't think you need to shrink. You just need to accept that although you're very sexually liberated and very sexually adventurous, this is one arena of liberation and adventure that isn't for you. Doesn't turn you off. You can function, but it's not a huge turn on. So don't go, or go rarely. Go every once in a great while, but don't go. Continue to explore and find other adventures that work for you in a way that this kind of swinging adventure does not. What's the one dish from your favorite restaurant that you can never recreate at home and that you are jonesing for? What if someone could bring that dish right to your door? Well, DoorDash is that someone. They can connect you to all your favorite restaurants in your city. Ordering is easy. Just use the DoorDash app and choose what you want to eat, and your Dasher will bring it right to you wherever you are. Not only is that burger place you love on DoorDash already, but over 310,000 other amazing restaurants are too. DoorDash connects you with door-to-door delivery in over 3,300 cities and in all 50 states across the United States and in Canada. Order from your local go-tos or choose from your favorite chains if that's your jam. Don't worry about dinner. Let dinner come to you with DoorDash. And right now, my listeners get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the promo code SAVAGE. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter the promo code SAVAGE. Again, that's promo code SAVAGE for $5 off your first order from DoorDash.
Hi, Dan. Straight Guy here with a question about pride. What are your thoughts about capitalism co-opting pride? The parade in New York is basically like watching hours of Super Bowl commercials walk by you, with tons of corporations and businesses sponsoring floats and swag and just about everything else. Likewise, corporate social media accounts, not including, say, Chick-fil-A, sport rainbow versions of their logos during the month of June. Now, I have a friend who is gay, and he hates that Pride has been co-opted by corporations. He thinks it's all cynical and just marketing and rainbow washing, and that they have ruined the free-spirited, anti-establishment roots of the Pride movement. To me, that seems like an acceptable sacrifice for the visibility and representation that businesses with huge international reach can provide. I think he, having been born and raised and spent his entire life in New York City, is just jaded. And forgetting that there are still plenty of places in America that you cannot have a pride parade for safety's sake. In places like that, representation in media is the only indication that queerness is not some dirty secret, even if it's just a gay couple getting a mortgage in a bank commercial. So what do you think? Has corporate America gone too far, or can we grin and bear the loss of a counterculture in favor of acceptance in the culture at large?
I was trapped in a hotel room in Chelsea in New York a year or two ago during the Pride Parade. And it was a little weird because I was there for a work event and I was there alone. And it just felt really weird to walk out into the midst of all of this partying and celebrating alone. So I kind of just avoided it. I ducked out to get a sandwich and then ducked back into my room and waited out Pride. And I'd heard so much about the corporate takeover of Pride and how oppressive that was. And I kind of rolled my eyes because I'm old enough to remember when we bitched endlessly, queer people did, we bitched endlessly that these big corporations and beer companies and car companies and mortgage companies, they were only too happy to take our money when we were buying, when we were consumers, but they would never show their support for us by sponsoring a float in the Pride Parade or sponsoring the Pride Parade. Now they all do, and we bitch endlessly about how oppressive it is and the corporatization of Pride. But I gotta say, walking out into New York that day, past the Google contingent, past the Estee Lauder contingent, past the Nordstrom's contingent, with everybody's Pride branded merch and t-shirts, it was a little bit oppressive. But is that not what we were asking for? That kind of acceptance? You know, we weren't marching to say, we're the counterculture, leave us alone, and we always want to be the counterculture. And there are still countercultural aspects of queer identity or identities and queer lives. And a lot of the people, look, people like me, who are sometimes accused of having assimilated or living a heteronormative life, we're living that queer life in sometimes institutions that had been previously exclusively heterosexual because we were kept out of them on our own terms. And we have queered marriage. We haven't been straightened out by marriage. We do marriage our way, which is different. All that said, yeah, I agree with your friend. However, if tomorrow Arby's and everyone else pulled out of Pride and stopped doing their Pride merch and Nike didn't release their Pride shoes, we would all complain endlessly about how they had abandoned us and abandoned Pride. And now might be a time when, as oppressive as it can be, as much as it makes our eyes roll back into our heads, with the Trump administration giving nurses and doctors and EMTs permission to deny care, potentially even life-saving care, to injured or sick queer people if they object to taking care of us on religious grounds. It can literally let us die on a gurney or die on the sidewalk, on the street. If Jesus, this might be a time when the pushback we need culturally, this might be a time when Google and Nordstrom and Amazon and Nike and Honda and all of these corporations stepping up and saying, you know what? We support queers matters and has value, because right now the federal government under Donald Trump and Mike fucking Pence is coming for queers, attacking queers, harming queers, doing everything they possibly can, everything within their power to hurt us. And so corporate America having to take sides, having to line up on one side or the other of that and choosing our side, maybe that at this moment has value. And we can revisit the issue of kicking all the corporations that we bitched endlessly about not being at Pride out of Pride when the Trump nightmare is over and we've kicked all the fucking anti-queer Republicans out of office. If you're in a rough patch or just going through life's daily ups and downs, you need someone who'll listen. Everyone faces challenges, but according to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, LGBTQ folks are 3 times likelier to experience mental health challenges due to discrimination and social rejection. Thankfully, Talkspace provides a support system trained to help members of the LGBTQ community handle our most challenging emotions around issues of gender, sexual identity, and orientation. Everyone deserves to be heard. That's why Talkspace provides therapy for how we live today. It's an affordable, convenient, and private safe space you can access wherever you are. Talkspace uses your preferences to match you with one of 5,000 or more therapists the same day you sign up. Talkspace is committed to helping LGBTQ folks experience acceptance and support. That's why they provide a safe space for you to be open and honest about what you're going through. Talkspace really couldn't be simpler. Send unlimited messages and hear back from your therapist daily, 5 days a week. All you need is a computer with an internet connection or the Talkspace mobile app on your phone. Your conversation is completely confidential and can be done from the privacy of your device. And if you want to switch therapists, you can do so at any time at no extra cost. Talkspace has more than 5,000 licensed therapists who are experienced in working with LGBTQ clients. To match with a therapist for a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, go to Talkspace.com/savage. Make sure to use the code SAVAGE to get $65 off your first month and show your support for the show in the process. That's $65 off your first month when you sign up today at Talkspace.com/savage.
Dan, I am exhausted right now. Okay. 40 years old, white, cisgendered, heterosexual male. So I realize that I don't know shit about fuck when it comes to people who are transgender or non-binary or gender fluid, et cetera. But I thought that we were all on the same page, that they, them pronouns were the universal, non-specific, everybody is supposed to be okay with them because they are applicable to everybody pronouns. But I was just privy to a conversation of including some people who identify as non-binary but still prefer a binary he, she, him, her pronoun and get upset at somebody for using they, them. And I just, what I don't generally jump to, you know, pointing a finger at outrage culture because that's a right-wing thing to do. But for Christ's sake, if we're going to get mad at people over not be, I'm confused. What are we doing here, Dan? What's the, can we have a thing that we just know you can call everybody
without that just something we all agree on that we know says, I respect your identity. I also don't know you, and I don't have time to for the full explanation of your gender identity. I respect it. It's great. Be who you are. But don't make me fucking write a book report just to refer to you in casual conversation.
Let it all out. There, you must feel better. I share your frustration at times. But, you know, if you look at it from a slightly different angle, you have given someone the greatest gift of all. You have given someone who loves to be upset a moment where they got to be really upset about bullshit. You didn't say anything malicious. You didn't misgender anyone intentionally. You made a reasonable assumption that somebody who is non-binary would prefer they, them, their pronouns, which are typically and overwhelmingly preferred by people who identify as non-binary. And this person or persons that identify as non-binary chose that moment to throw a fit because they're one of the handful of non-binary identified people who prefer to use binary pronouns. What can you do besides say, well, good to know. Now I know. Try to remember that. And then you make a mental note never to use a fucking pronoun in front of anybody, particularly that person, ever again. It's really not that hard to do. We typically use pronouns when we're referring to people who aren't there. And then I said, and then she said, and I said, but then they said, that's when we use pronouns. You don't use someone's pronoun typically, commonly, in front of them. And they're easy enough to avoid using if you want to just tiptoe around this minefield. All that said, I think we need to have some sort of Vatican II council. We all need to gather together in a room and come up with one non-gender specific pronoun. A lot of them have been kicking around out there. Z, they, they, them. They, them gets confusing, even for the best intentioned people. And we use it all the time. I use they as a singular pronoun all the time. In my column, you need to go to a doctor. You need to tell them about what's going on with you. That flows. That makes sense. Shakespeare used they, them as a singular pronoun. There is a long tradition of using it. It's weird when it comes to referring to a person in certain specific ways because of English grammar. They're coming to dinner. How many place settings should I set? Well, they are coming at 8. How many place settings do they need? People get confused because usually that means more than one person. So that confusion will probably go on until we all get used to it. Language changes, usage drives meaning, or, and this would be my preferred option, we come up with something else. We come up with a new word, not she, not he, not they, not them, but some word that we all understand is a singular gender neutral pronoun that we can all deploy. And until that time comes, some people who just live to get upset about this shit are going to blow up at you. And rather than internalize that and feel terrible and angry, just tell yourself, good job. You gave someone who enjoys getting angry the gift of getting angry. And you never have to talk to or think about that person ever again.
Hey, Dan, female who has always kind of identified as straight, recently realized that maybe I might be bi. I've got some friends who kind of encourage that. I'm finding myself more and more attracted to the female side. So, it just kind of encourages the fantasy of wanting to do that. And with these friends kind of encouraging it really makes it so that I feel like I can't wait for that situation to come up. However, I have had this situation come up twice now in my life where I could have a situation where I might get some female action, but I seem to just like freeze up when it happens, and I don't know why. In the first situation, I was a unicorn, a guy and his wife, and I was fine playing with him, but when she got involved, I just froze. And then she never would play with me again because she felt like she was making me uncomfortable. And ever since then, I've been kind of like, oh, you know, if that situation ever comes up again, I'm totally going to go for it. But last night, I was with some friends, and they had some other people come over. Things started moving. People were getting naked. They brought out this machine that would give you a shock, and everyone was kind of touching each other with this shock. And it kind of got exciting, and I was the one who was sitting there dressed, and I'm like, well, guys, see you later, gotta go. And I left. So yeah, once again, completely froze up. So wondering maybe why I'm freezing up. And then second question is like, what can I do to relax next time? I realize maybe pot would help, but I don't live in a state where that is legal and got a job interview coming up. So I don't, you know, I kind of want to keep off of that right now. So aside from doing that, some other suggestions as to maybe how to relax.
Probably internalized homophobia, that old song. That's probably why you're freezing up at these moments where you could finally, after thinking about it and masturbating about it and imagining it for such a long time, have a sexual encounter with a woman. My feeling is that the scenarios you describe where these things almost could have happened and then you panicked were all kind of high stakes, high pressure, expectation laden scenarios. You're having a three-way. You are the unicorn. There's a lot of performance anxiety that comes with being the unicorn for some straight couple. You want that to go well. You don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. You wound up hurting somebody's feelings by pulling away from them. And then there's this, everybody's about to maybe mess around and they're passing around some shock machine as a icebreaker, some sort of high-tech zappy spin the bottle, but with adults. And who knows where that was going to go? Who knows how kinky that scenario was going to get or how many people are going to wind up in a pile? And you were nervous. I would encourage you to find a woman. And there are lots of bi women out there who've not yet had a same-sex encounter, who are in opposite-sex relationships, who are interested and curious. Find someone who feels as apprehensive and awkward as you. So that's the baseline. So there isn't this pressure around expectations. There isn't this kind of performance anxiety. And you're just going to get together and have a drink or maybe make out, and no expectations of penetrative sex or touching or oral sex or anything else. You're just going to roll around a little bit and experiment and take it very slowly, baby steps. You know, people passing around some sort of electric zapper machine and shocking each other and getting naked, that's not baby steps. That's varsity level shit. So is, you know, a unicorn three-way. It's not super high varsity. It's not elite athletics, sexual athletics, but it's up there. The three-way's up there. And it comes laden with expectations and pressure. And you're panicking in the moment, probably because of expectations and pressure, but also probably because of a little bit of internalized homophobia. There's some part of you that keeps tiptoeing up to this line and then panicking at that moment, you know, because once you've eaten some pussy, once you've done that thing, you've done that thing. It was scary for me a little bit the first time I put a dick in my mouth because of what it meant, what it confirmed. You know you're bisexual. You believe yourself to be bisexual. I respect your identity. I'm not gainsaying your bisexuality. I knew myself to be gay before the first time I put a dick in my mouth. It still was fucking scary the first time I put a dick in my mouth. So I get it. It was scary because of internalized homophobia. You've internalized some biphobia or homophobia. Find somebody who feels the same way. Find someone who's at the same point that you're at, whose expectations are low, as yours will be low, going into a low-stakes, mellow encounter. Make out, see where it goes.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I am a 20-something woman from the West Coast, and I have a question about, I don't know, commodified relationships or trading in sexual favors kind of within the context of a long-term relationship. I've been with my fiance for a little over 5 years now, and we've known each other for most of our lives. We met when we were very young, but we've only been together as adults. And it is quite normal in our relationship for us to kind of trade sexual favors, which is usually essentially trading me giving him a blowjob for a very in-depth body massage after a really hard workout, or him doing, you know, an extra load of dishes that week and buying us takeout. I think it's totally normal and healthy because we negotiate it on terms that we both feel are fair. But it came up in casual conversation with a friend of mine the other day, and she seems to think that the fact that we have these kind of negotiations where we're kind of equating sexual favors or sexual acts with non-sexual acts kind of diminishes the value of the intimacy of that act, and it kind of reduces it to a chore. And to be fair, there's a part of me that does feel a little bit like giving a blowjob is a chore. I don't particularly enjoy it, although I do enjoy satisfying my partner, and I will, you know, do a good job when I'm doing it, and I will be invested in the act. But she's worried about kind of the long-term, you know, health and sexual health of our relationship, because she thinks that we're not sexually compatible. She's a listener of the show, and she believes, you know, that sexual compatibility is a long-term predictor of success of a relationship. And we're both in our, you know, mid late 20s, so we're still fairly young. And she's worried that us kind of getting married soon and committing at this young age, when there maybe is a potential mismatch in sexual favors, or sexuality, the fact that, you know, I don't want to do these things, but I can kind of be convinced into doing it by, you know, trade-offs of chores around the house and, you know, purchasing of meals and things like that. I don't think she's entirely wrong in that she has a point that it's good to kind of look at something like that with a critical lens and really evaluate whether or not, you know, we're both like comfortable with that sort of arrangement. But I'm wondering, you know, I am young and I do recognize that I could be in the wrong and that maybe this kind of approach is a sign of things to come maybe a little bit more long term, and that's not, you know, a healthy way to kind of go about intimacy within a relationship. It's not the only time we ever engage in any sort of sexual interactions, but it definitely is kind of a part of our sex life that there's kind of this trade-off. And I want to know what you and your listeners think. Are we headed down a path of mutually assured destruction, or is this something that can work as long as the people involved are, you know, both negotiating and feeling like the terms of the arrangement are fair? I'd love to know what you think.
It's not just that the terms of this arrangement are fair. It sounds like the terms of this arrangement are fun. Like, you guys kind of enjoy this little commodification around the edges of your sexual life. There's a lot of overlap. You don't go into the things that you both enjoy doing that you do together, and you don't have to have this kind of quid pro quo swap meet attitude about. But if you have a positive attitude about this kind of quid pro quo, there's something that you enjoy, getting your dick sucked. They call it a blow job. It's work. I don't necessarily enjoy it, but I enjoy giving you that pleasure. And so I'm going to do that job, do that work, give you that pleasure, and you're going to give me dinner. You're going to give me a full body massage, which is work for you. And that kind of exchange of labor, so long as both partners have a good attitude about it, as long as it's a fun and sexy game and not a bitter and resentful exchange, I don't think there's anything wrong here. I don't think you have a problem. What you've described would not be to your friend's taste. And therefore, you should not invite your friend to have a three-way with you where blowjobs are exchanged for Thai food. You should not invite your friend into a throuple relationship with you and your boyfriend, because the ways in which you guys have gamified certain things on the periphery of your sexual interests outside the area of overlap, that wouldn't appeal to your friend. But the fact that it works for you guys is not evidence that you aren't sexually compatible. It's evidence you are sexually compatible. It's working. What you're doing is working. You both take pleasure in the pleasure you give and the pleasures that then you exchange. This is not a problem. There is no problem here. The outstanding question, of course, is whether it's sustainable over time. If you find this shifting from fun and exciting game to bitter and resentful exchange of prisoners, with dinner being one prisoner and his dick being the other, then you need to find your way back to fun and exciting game if possible. You know, bitterness and resentment and being taken for granted, when these things creep in along the edges of somebody's relationship, of anyone's relationship, any two people, three people's relationships, that's a bad sign. But that can creep into a relationship. Entitlement, expectations, resentments, that can creep into a relationship even where two people are 100% overlap in their sexual interests. Not that there's any two people out there that are 100% overlap in their sexual interests, but even if there's a couple where they do all and mostly the things they both want to do all the time, that relationship can still be impacted by bitterness, resentment, expectations being taken for granted. Be on guard for those things, those dynamics. however you structure your relationship. And to your friend who is a listener, I think it's perfectly legitimate to raise the issue of basic sexual compatibility, because I do think that is important, especially in sexually exclusive, committed, long-term relationships. But one of the things I also talk about a lot is the Venn diagram. You know, you have two people in a relationship in a Venn diagram. There's the area of overlap where there's all those shared sexual interests. And then there are, you know, the areas outside the overlap. And it's important to, particularly in a sexually exclusive relationship, try to move those circles as close together as you possibly can, to indulge your partner, to do for your partner, which sometimes means doing something that never doing something leaves you on the fetal position on the floor in the bathroom afterwards crying, but sometimes it means doing something for them, for their pleasure, and making a little bit of a sacrifice, an expectation that they will do for you and do for your pleasure and make a sacrifice in return. That is part of a healthy, functional sexual relationship. Going there for your partner, doing for your partner doing the same for you, that is a form of sexual compatibility. Sexual compatibility is not, we made a Venn diagram and it was just one circle, complete and total overlap, because there's no relationship where that's possible, where that has ever happened. All right, before we get to your response calls, we're going to read some tweets. Hannah True tweets, a little unorthodox, but puppy pads are also a great, accessible, and cheap option to help absorb the mess after squirting. Hope it helps. Hashtag Savage Lovecast. Yes, Hannah, I think that is very helpful. Lay in some puppy pads if you want to squirt cheaply. Blue Moniker tweets, what the fuck with the trigger warning at Fake Dan Savage? Your whole podcast is one big trigger for someone. I love it. I adore you and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. Keep up the good work. Hashtag Savage Lovecast. Thank you, Blue Moniker. We will keep up the good work. We usually don't include a trigger warning, but every once in a while, we feel like one might be appropriate. Nancy makes that call, and I do whatever Nancy tells me to do. And finally, Diana tweets, at Fake Dan Savage, just gave a caller the same advice my mother gave me. Don't date a guy who's rude to the waitress. Your mama was right. I'm right. Never date somebody who's rude to waitresses or waiters or bartenders or hotel maids or anybody who works in retail or any other service profession. It tells you how they will treat you too in the long run. All right. If you want us to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the hashtag Savage Lovecast so we can find it. And now your response calls.
Hey, Dan. Just calling about your most recent One Minute Wonder show. The act of somebody getting fucked and then that person getting fucked and that person getting fucked all at the same time with three or more people is called a daisy chain, where everybody's having fun.
Hey, Dan. One of your callers asked what the sex act is called when one person fucks another person who fucks another person who fucks another person. I always call that a human centipede. Never taken part in one, but would love to one day.
Hi, Dan. Listening to the One Minute Wonder show, and obviously you have not talked to anybody in the South. The terms are y'all and all y'all for mixed groups, men, women, combined, etc., non-binary, y'all and all y'all, and it really should spread farther than the South.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Savage Love Live is coming to Chicago, Madison, Minneapolis, Toronto, and Somerville, Massachusetts this fall. Go to savagelovecast.com and click on events to find out more about dates and to get your tickets for Chicago, Madison, Minneapolis, Toronto, and Somerville, Massachusetts. Follow me on Twitter at Fake Dan Savage. Follow Rob Walker on Twitter at Not Rob Walker. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.